Welcome back, David.
Hello.
Hello. You sound Hello. Sick.
I'm a little sick.
No offense, but you sound sick.
Yeah, like, oh, sick, dude.
Yeah, that's what I meant. You sound
that's what you
sick.
Meant, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I was on a little trip to Dallas, Texas, and then on, like, as I was getting ready for my flight back home, I was like, I got a cough. And you never want to have a cough on a plane. You don't want to be that dude.
No.
Yeah.
And so, I was like, it's probably just the different humidity levels that I'm used to. And here we are. A few days later, I am not feeling the greatest.
Bummer. Yeah. Well, how was Texas?
What'd you go to Texas for?
It was, there was a video maker conference called Vid Summit.
Mm-hmm.
I went last year. This was my second year going. I saw a couple other people in our circle there. Brad Rodriguez from Fix This Build That was there. John Malecki was there, but I didn't see him at all. Steve Ramsey was there. Oh my gosh, I can't remember his name. Is it 721 Woodworks? Is that the name of the channel? Was there. And it was just a kind of a good little learning sesh for video makers. It was really good.
Cool. I was seeing a lot of like social media and stuff come out during that. A lot of the people that were there looked like a good time.
Yeah.
And it's one of those video maker things that's not about the fans. It's not about people that come and like, you know, just want to see their favorite video maker, right? It's for video makers to make better videos, correct?
Yeah, there is no, on the website, it's like, this is not a fan meetup. This is just for learning and networking. So, yeah. Cool. Mr. Beast was there, but he was too busy to say hello to me. Next time.
He told me he saw you, but he said you were too busy.
Oh, good. Yeah, you guys. So it's good to hear that you guys are back in contact with each other.
Yeah. Teaching him how to weld.
After the fight, you know.
Yeah, after the fallout.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you guys patched things up.
Yeah, man.
Hear all about it on the Philip DeFranco show.
You know, I'm still waiting for your apology video, then.
Oh, what a great idea. What a great idea. Okay, so you just make an apology video to Mr. Beast about the fallout and make this big, really just non-specific story about like all the stuff that happened and how it's just water under the bridge and we're good and, you know. And people would get really concerned, and probably he would notice because of who you are. That would be hilarious.
Yeah. I'll work on it.
Okay.
Good.
Well, Jimmy, you don't sound sick.
No.
I mean, you sound sick, but not sick.
No, man. I'm run down a little bit, but I'm okay. I did my Peloton last night for the first time in a week. At the end of the day, after working all day, after having 30 people in and out of the house and Maker Camp, I'm going backwards in time. And then previous to that, a week ago this time, I was in Carhartt. Me and Derek flew out of Boston. We went to Carhartt. So last Saturday afternoon, I drove to Hartford. I went to the Hartford Makerspace there. It's called Connecticut CT. I did a talk there at their fundraiser. That night, I drove to Boston, Saturday night last week. Me and Derek got on a plane, went to Detroit, hung out with all the several people at Carhartt. And it wasn't just influences from our side. It was influences from the food business, people who raise cattle and a few other farmers, people who grow flowers. So it was more farmers and growers than there were makers, just a few of us. And it was a really wonderful time. They showed us the production facility and the design facility. Got to make friends with the head designer at Carhartt, which is unbelievable.
That's cool.
And it's still a family-owned business. I'm wearing my new Carhartt shirt. So they let us do a shopping spree, which was fun. They didn't give us for free, but 50% off really makes a difference. They give us 50% off. They give us their employee discount. And then I got home. As soon as I flew home, I had about 5 or 6 people here. And then the crowd here grew, and then Maker Camp started Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Huge deluge of rain. Sunday was a sunny day, and it was a big redemption. It was a beautiful day. And then Monday was the cleanup, and so Monday cleaned up a little bit. And yesterday was my first day back in the shop. I'm back on the Bell. This Thursday, we're going to try and pour again. My buddy who's involved in the Bell project wants to be here, so that's why I'm not just like spontaneously trying it. I have to wait for him to come up from New York. So Thursday, we're going to do our second attempt. We have better molds. They're a little bit more cured. Today I'm going to burn out the mold all day just to get all the moisture out of it. And what else? I'm back in action experimenting last night on the sewing machine. I'm developing some products with this leather bag that I made just before I left. And these zipper bags. So if you guys saw my stories today, you'll see me making some zipper bags. Everybody loved the zipper bag and everybody loves this other bag I made. So I'm going to see if I can't start a little line of bags. And with Howard and Jordan in Alabama, we won't necessarily hire a sewer.
Arkansas.
What did I say? Alabama. Oh, I met a guy from Alabama. I was talking to him last night. So we're going to see if we can't find a sewer to move those little projects along. Not necessarily bring them into the factory, but if there's just somebody local to the factory that we can monitor the work from near there. And I have a video coming out this week. I haven't put a video out in a couple weeks. I have a video coming out, hopefully this weekend, of the episode 4 of The Graveyard House. That video is up for the patrons right now. They get to see it. And yeah, I got to start working on some Carolina shoe videos. I got a lot to do. But I'm back in action.
Cool.
It's like being on vacation for 10 days in my own house.
Bob loves vacation.
It looks like Maker Camp was just packed full of
I don't know the attendance, but it gets bigger every year. It definitely was bigger this year. We've done in the past, we call it the Maker Burn. It's like Burning Man, where they burn an effigy of this big thing in the middle. And Wesley made it 2 years in a row. Wesley Treat made the thing. First it was a dinosaur, then it was like a jackalope. And this year they didn't do the burn because it takes up so much square footage of the giant field. They said, Austin said I'd rather dedicate that to more booths. So this year there was a lot more booths because we didn't have to put a 75 or 125 foot circle. That was per the fire marshal's request. So there was just a big circle like Burning Man, but there was no booths in the past. So now there's a lot more booths. There was everything in the middle and a big thing walking around, and the booths were more plentiful and more full. I did a bandsaw demo. My first bandsaw demo got rained out, so I did one the following day. I did welding teaching on the Lincoln Electric booth. I taught 2 days in a row for about 3 hours at a time teaching welding. Everybody takes turns. There was a big schedule, and everybody in the Lincoln Electric stable takes turns welding. It's always fun. It's a great way to meet people, too. So each time you teach somebody weld, you spend at least 20 minutes with them. Or maybe more. And it was great. It was great. There was lines.
The rain looked
crazy. There was lines of everything. Yeah. And even with the rain, there was a couple of guys there that are concert promoters. They were telling us, they were like, if this was a festival and that rain, everything would be shut down. Everybody would be told either to go home or just don't do anything because of the risk of electric and whatever. But a lot of the electric was shut off right away. So everybody went to the booths that didn't need electric, like hand carving and things like that. Nobody stopped. So the booths that were more simple were packed. Nobody went home. Everyone just waited for the rain to stop. And there was several floods in and around this area because of that day. It was just such a heavy downpour. There were little floodplains developing in the Blackthorn that the family said they've never seen in the 30 years that they've been there.
Wow.
The rain, because the ground got so soaked. So, and the water was just hitting the ground and running through this one covered area, they called the pavilion. They said the water never in their existence ran through the pavilion. Like 10 inches of water came through this one spot. But nobody got injured. Everybody enjoyed it. And it just pulled everybody together better. It's funny. Austin's mom and even Austin said to me, he says, I've never seen a happier group of people get rained on in my life. Mm. Everyone's just so, okay, whatever. Let's just deal with this. And some people obviously went home early because of the rain, but they missed Sunday. But the Sunday ceremony there was a lot of people there. So come to Maker Camp next year. You won't miss it. You won't miss out.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, there was, just to give a quick, there was timber framing, welding, blacksmithing, pottery making, glass blowing, printmaking,
oh, wow.
leather sewing, fabric sewing. You can go at each one of the booths. It's like if you come in the booth and you leave with something, you come into Patty's sewing booth, you come into the leather booth, you leave with something, you go into the welding booth, there's a sample, there's a plasma cutting, there's a whole woodworking tent where you can go and make picture frames, you can learn CNC. The one thing we don't have is laser cutting, but it's just only because we just haven't dedicated space. So I thought it's kind of more of a watch and see. What else did we do?
I can forward all my X-Tool emails to you if you want.
Okay, good. Yeah, yeah. There's a knife-making tent dedicated to knife-making, and Mareko Mamasi was there, a world-famous knife maker. Coal Iron Forge brings their tools. Wow. What else? All right, that's a good thing. I'll look at more. But so if you're going to come next year, it's just going to be bigger and better.
Just change the weekend, and I'll be there, man.
They start selling out like by the end of this week, maybe by the end of next week. Austin always calls me and says we sold out. That means they sold out the rooms that are at the place for that weekend. Yeah. But the tickets obviously sell if you're just going to attend and leave or just come for a day or get your own residence, your own place to stay. Those tickets continue to sell.
And then the rooms in your house are gone like for the next 5 years already, right?
Yeah, they're all booked. Everyone's got their embroidered pillows in their room. And just because people ask, I'll announce it here. Austin puts out the list of classes that'll take place there. And I'm always at every one of the classes. If I'm not traveling, I'll be there hanging around. So check, I'll Instagram it if you're curious. But the list of classes always comes out a couple of weeks after Maker Camp for the year. So over at the Maker Camp facility, there's a new makerspace there now. So if it's cold out, some of the classes will take place down there. If it's warm out, they'll do blacksmithing outside. So I'll let everybody know. This is about 12 classes between now and the next Maker Camp. The weekend classes for about 20 people each.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's turned out to be a lot of fun and a really, really great tradition that a lot of people are coming to. Except for you two guys.
Jab.
You can blame my kids or my wife. I don't know. Mm. They both had something to do with their birthdays. So you can blame
Some people celebrate their birthday at Maker Camp. Just
saying.
It's always Chris Cash's birthday at Maker Camp. Just saying.
Well, we actually have in-laws in town this week because of the birthdays. So in addition to
a lot of that, people bring their in-laws
the birthday stuff. Yeah, I'm sure they do. I'll bring my Florida in-laws to New York for a thing they don't want to do.
They'll have a wonderful time.
Oh, I'm sure they would. Well, that's cool. I am sorry I missed it, though. I would like to make it one of these days. It sounds awesome. So I have been doing some really interesting, fun things, working on some stuff. And it's brought up an interesting thing in me. So we've been doing this show for, what, 20 years? 25 years?
32.
Something like that?
32.
Decades.
32 decades. We've been doing this show for a long time, and we've talked a whole lot about how well videos do or don't do and why that is and, you know, like what it's like to work really hard on something and not do well. And so I'm hesitant to sound like I'm complaining. I don't want to rehash any of those things. But at the same time, like, you guys are the guys I talk to about this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it just happens to be on a microphone. It happens to be recorded for other people to hear it. So I was thinking about, like, I want to talk about this, but it's going to sound like I'm complaining. When the reality is I'm just talking to people who I have this in common with.
You can complain.
You know what I mean? So okay. I'm kind of in a weird spot where it's like, I don't know how we continue to have therapy with each other without right. it just sounding like we're whining to everybody else. So anyway, whatever.
It.
I apologize for it sounding like it's whining. So I made this robot head. We talked about it last show. I made this life-size Optimus Prime helmet out of cardboard, and it was so much fun. I had a blast making it. Like, for the first time in quite a while, I had fun gluing things together and, like, just, you know, like, oh, this is new to me. This is, like, weird and funny, and I think it looks hilarious, and I've got video of my kids wearing it. It looks funny on me because it's big, but on my kids, it's really funny. And so we had a lot of fun with the video. We did silly, you know, things at the end. And I knew that, you know, a video like that is kind of specific to people who like costume stuff. people who like Transformer stuff. I know it's not going to be like a broad appeal video, but it that video did worse than anything that I can remember in as long as I can remember. And the first, you're muted, Jimmy.
Yeah, what did you get in the first 24?
About 50,000, which is, I know for a lot of people, 50,000 views is like, wow,
that's that would a lot be amazing. For me. Stop complaining.
And geez. And just as a point of context for me, that's a relatively low number in, you know, in the first 24, and we're still, it's still at like 75. The numbers don't matter. The point is like, it's a weird place to be where you do something that, and we've all been there, and I'm not looking for an answer or anything. I'm just kind of, this is what my week has been like. To really like pour yourself into something and have a blast with it and be really proud of the physical output, be proud of the video output, have the response to the video. The people that watched it loved it. Like it's like a 99.8% thumbs up on the video kind of thing. But then the total number of views is down so much that it makes it really hard to justify doing that type of thing in the future. It's, I don't know, it's weird, you know?
There's four potential rewards with every video that we make. There's the reward of having fun making the thing. There's the reward of having that finished thing when you're done. And then there's the reward of the people who are your core audience enjoying it, and then the potential reward of the video doing well. And it's kind of weird, those, if one of those fails, it just feels like a total failure.
Interesting.
Any one of those four could just be a, just have this, like, there's the negative part of that always affects you more than the positive part.
Yeah.
And then it goes away. So you just start the next project. But I think we're in a unique situation as far as YouTubers, where there's a lot of people that just make videos just to make videos. And when that video does terribly, there is no reward for them. But when we make videos, we have the physical thing that we wanted to make for ourselves or for somebody else, and we will have that. And so the videos mean more to us, to me, because I have this memory. I have this physical thing.
I hadn't looked at it that way. I think there's also, so you could look at all of those things, those four things, as the rewards, but then there's also a risk with the videos. So, and I'm just thinking of this in response to what you said. I didn't plan this, but you know, you have the financial risk of investing the money into the materials that may or may not turn out like you want. You have the time risk of making that video and what it's going to take to physically make the thing plus the video. You have the risk against your future sponsorships and video performance, because when a video does poorly, it's reflective in future sponsorships. Mm-hmm. They look at your last five videos and they think, well, the last five, you know, three of those five did not do well. So that's probably a trend. Now, if one doesn't do well, you know, that's whatever, that happens. But so these days you have to be really conscious of like your past five videos and what the performance is like. So when you have one or two that don't do well, there's a lot of risk there in your future revenue. So it's kind of a strange thing that the rewards you're talking about are absolutely there, but then you also have a risk that you're balancing with every video decision. And I mean, I think that's the part of what we do that I don't like. That's the part mm-hmm. that, like, I wish that we could focus on whether there's a this is life, but I wish I could focus on whether there is a reward or not versus whether there is a reward or not or risk or not. But such is life.
That is the ultimate question, though. That is what everybody tries to figure out. Everybody would make a hit show if you could always just do it. I think you just got to throw a lot at the wall and hopefully something makes a splash.
I enjoy the risk. I think I thrive on this whole thing being a game and trying to balance of what I want to make, what the audience wants to see, what works and what doesn't work. And I kind of enjoy that. Of course I want every video to succeed. I want to do this for, another 10 years, but the possibility of me not being able to do this for another 10 years is kind of the kick in the butt that I need to keep improving. Yeah.
I look at it this way, and that's why I just pulled up my phone just so I could look. Because you said the reward could be the thing that you have at the end. And I'm brainstorming in space. I'm brainstorming in live videos, for instance. My zipper bag, which was two videos ago where I did leather zipper pouches, it got 61,000 views up till now. Still, it's over 2.5 weeks. It's a month ago. And it still hasn't broken more than 61,000 views. But that helped me develop the zipper bag line, which I'm working on, which who knows if I'll ever follow through or not, but I'm going to work on trying to follow through. And it reinvigorated the tab and slot bag, which I developed a year ago. Having those two bag concepts, it gives me more hope that that's going to be, that could be, Aaron would always say, every single one of your videos is one person's whole career. And I got to look at that and remember that.
Wow.
For instance, that could be a career, me developing that bag. And now with Jordan and Howard, I have no excuse not to fall through and see some of these things through to the end, because now I have help. I have someone that will find a factory, someone that will follow up, somebody that will help me develop sales. So the fact that it's only 61,000, I don't look at that. I look at, okay, that was forcing me to develop an open space in public, and now I have something cool that I already have. For better or for worse, it's like a little bit of a Kickstarter. And me and Jordan were talking about it last night. He just goes, let's pre-sell a couple hundred and see if we can, before we take the risk. So you can look at it like that. And then I did the video, the 13 most dangerous things you should never do. It just broke 100,000 views last night. It's been over 3 weeks it's been out. I would assume that video would do much better, whatever. But there's lots of little pieces in it that have reels. One of the reels is over $200,000. 200,000 views. I wish it was $200,000.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Reels are where the money is.
Yeah. No, it's 200,000 views. And, you know, people have a love-hate relationship with reels, that it brings in people that don't know you. And I'm like, I have no control of any of that, so I don't even think about it for 1 second. But whatever. It looks impressive when I'm dealing with, I have a couple meetings with TV producers coming up. When they see, though, oh, this reel's got 200,000 views. Oh, that's cool. I mean, it's not a lot in the scheme of things, but...
Yeah.
If I had 200,000 people in my backyard right now wanting pizza, I would need more dough.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I think it's just it's a place that I have found myself many, many times throughout this, as long as we've been doing this, where I do pretty much completely different things week to week. And occasionally I'll hit something that just, man, this is fun. Like, some things are cool, some things are interesting, some things are fun. And when you get done with something fun and you just want other people to have, like, we got a comment that was, and I don't remember exactly who said it or what the specific word was, but it was like the joy on Bob's face when he turned around the helmet and he saw it. Like, you can tell that he's happy. He's joyful about that thing. It's the same look he had when he lit up the lightsaber for the first time on camera. And I've gotten that comment several times, that, like, when you lit up the lightsaber, I mean, this was years ago. This was like 6 or 7 years ago. Lit up that lightsaber for the first time on camera, I laughed. I just couldn't not smile and laugh out loud, because it was so much work to get a thing. You know, it was fun. It was fun that it worked. It fun that it existed. And so that's a great feeling, regardless of who's watching. But then when you want other people to feel that, like, enjoy that thing with you, and, you know, it just doesn't hit with people, it's just kind of like, well, am I with the wrong people? Am I doing the wrong thing? You know what I mean? There's just a lot of unknown, a lot of question around it. And so it's kind of a weird week of having the kind of highs of enjoyment and fun, and then the, not lows, but the not highs of, like, well, that didn't really, that didn't really work. And the next video, which I'm still finishing, it's supposed to be out this weekend, so we'll see, is another costume thing that is hilarious and fun, and I have a feeling it's going to hit the same way. But I'm too far into it, you know? It's like, I'm already going to do it.
Here's the thing. One of the things that I learned from Patty Galloway is not every... So, for the non-YouTubers, YouTube gives you an hour into the video, YouTube gives you a ranking how your video did in the last 10, and you always want
for context,
one of 10.
My Optimus so, helmet was 10
one
out
of 10,
10
means it's performing.
Yeah,
10 of 10, and that always hurts, no matter what. But what I've learned is we don't always make one of 10 videos. We know this going into it, so you have to set your expectations. Like, is this a 3 of 10 video? Is this a 10 of 10? Because this one's for me. This one isn't for my audience. So it's about setting your expectations, because even though you get better every time, I love that phrase. I try to get better every time, 1% every single time. But I know that not every video is going to outperform the previous one. So you got to learn to set
that's
your expectations.
Well, let me tell you about this next project that I've been working on. And I'm not going to show it to you now. I'll show you in the after show. I don't want to give it away because it is so gross. We have video.
Yeah. We have video now. So we can't just show
youngest
things.
My son, he's 10, and he's a little guy. But he wanted to be a hobbit for Halloween. And so we were joking a while back about how, you know, hobbits have really big, hairy feet. Turns out, I looked it up, they're not actually big. They just have really hairy feet. But it's funnier because in the movies, they have big feet and they're really hairy. So I was like, well, you know, I mean, we could make a mold of my foot and then put your foot in it and then pour silicone around it. And then we could make a shoe that looks like my foot that you could wear. And then we could put hair on it. And I'm like, huh, we could totally do that. And he's like,
oh,
what?
Wow.
We can do that? So we did that. And it's so gross. It's so gross, but so cool. Mm. So we made an alginate mold of my feet. And then he stood in the mold and we poured silicone around them. So the outside is my foot and the inside is his foot. And then I painted them and then I added fake hair
That's
to them.
Fantastic.
And they are just so gross.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
I will show you in the after show whether you want to see it or not. But I'm not going to show it right now. And they turned out,
that is,
they turned
I
out
do
really
want
well.
To
the first
this.
Attempt did not turn out well, but it was one of those, like I was talking about the risk of the material costs. I had to rebuy 2 boxes of alginate, 2 boxes of dragon skin. And you know, each one of these things is like $40-$50 a piece. So that's about $200 of dragons.
Where does dragon skin come from?
No, it's like a silicone that they use for body type stuff. And so I had to rebuy all the stuff because the first attempt, it kind of worked, but it wasn't great. So the investment was like, well, I can either throw this away and just I didn't do it, or I invest more money into getting it right. And I think that was the right call. I mean, because it's whether the video does well or not, he looks hilarious and it's going to be a great memory for him to have. And we were talking about that. We were when I was like molding his feet and stuff. Or putting the stuff around his feet. I'm like, you know, buddy, there's nobody that you know anywhere who will have the experience that you're having right now. And he was like, what do you mean? I said, you don't know anybody. Mm. Not that it can't exist, but you don't know anybody whose dad is making a mold of his feet to put your feet in. And like, you know, we had to put
a
soul.
Use that experience to pay the mortgage.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, that's another good point. But we were... So this thing sits over his foot, but we still needed a sole to the bottom of it. So he is wearing a sock, and then I barged on the replacement sole of a shoe onto the bottom of his sock. So I'm sitting there painting barge onto the bottom of his sock while it's on his foot. And I'm like, there's nobody else who will have this experience. And you should really just understand how weird this is, you know. And he was just laughing because it was so funny.
I think of it this way, and obviously it's not helping me at the moment, but I think of it this way. When this whole video collection, I honestly believe there's been an arc in the last 12 years of me making videos. They were a little bit more simpler in the beginning. Now they're obviously a little bit more elaborate in some cases, but there is a balance. Some are very elaborate, some aren't. So there is like a nice even tone to my videos of complexity and simplicity. And I think the whole library is going to have value. And by me adding this 60,000 view leather zipper video, if I put all my leather videos together, there's a value there, not only monetarily, but obviously educationally. And so it's just another piece of the giant puzzle, which is going to make a huge difference to somebody's life in the future. might be mine, maybe somebody else's. Right. But the idea that I just keep adding, like that 60,000 view leather video, it's not setting the world on fire, but it's a nice document for somebody that wants to do that for themselves. And I must say, by the way, if you guys check out my last couple of posts, I got some incredibly beautiful comments from Sean Beckner on my Instagram post. We shared it. He invited me to share it, so I shared it. And also Evan's Woodshop. Two young Sean's a grown man and Evan's a young boy. We met him at Workbench Con, and I've known Sean for 10 years, but we met in person this weekend. So I just wanted to just give those guys a shout out for the kind, beautiful words they posted. You can go look at those. And I got a lot of those in person this weekend. So it's for that type of reason, honestly, it's worth more than money. And people coming up to me and they'll say, that video you did, and I, in my mind, I'm like, oh, that video that did nothing changed my life because of X, Y, and Z. Or that video that you did, or when you did those, when you and David did that silly thing years ago. You know, these are videos that are long forgotten about. But when I meet somebody at Maker Camp and they come up to me and they hug me and they say, that video changed my life when you did that. And in my mind, it was just a silly, stupid, throwaway thing for entertainment value. But obviously began to develop, I'm beginning to realize the importance of every one of my videos. And how, you know, how they mean something to everybody and somebody, and so
that's a good perspective for sure.
Yeah,
I think you know, I think over the last several months we've been talking about this kind of thing and like getting back to just doing the things that you want to do. And we've had some really great comments from and responses from people. We love it when all of you, the three of us, do the thing that you're really excited about. Just do that, you know. And I think that's a great sentiment, and I appreciate that support from the people that have said that. The reality is, you bring up the mortgage. Like, you have to do the thing that you want to do, but it's also got to pay the mortgage. It's also got to feed the kids.
You know what it's like?
And so there's a weird balance there of, yes, I would love to make Transformer heads and gross feet and fun stuff like that all the time. But the fact is, I know that at the beginning of next week, I have to do a woodworking video. I've got to balance it. I've got to keep it, you know, I've got to do something that I know will garner a little bit more. It's still useful. It's still in my wheelhouse, but it's a little more broad. Mm-hmm. And there's this balance of those things back and forth that you have to do. It's part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe think of it instead of paying the mortgage, maybe think of it as it's a balance of sometimes I make videos for me and sometimes I make videos that benefit the audience.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a good perspective too.
Yeah.
Well, so that's kind of what I've been into. I have a couple of other ideas, things not costume related things, but other out of the box, unusual. They're not going to hit with a lot of people. Ideas that I would like to do next. I was planning on doing next, but now, you know, I'm just like I need to space them out a little bit. I've got to put some other things in between them that are a little broader appeal. And even that's kind of a catch-22. Forby and I've talked about this a lot, and me and the whole team talked about this a lot for a long time. The catch-22 is, do you continue to do those broad appeal videos here and there to keep a broad audience, or do you not? Do you niche down to a little bit to, if I'm going to be the weird guy that makes feet and robot heads, then maybe I should just do that type of stuff and let the audience reform around those new things. I mean, we talked about it with car stuff. Like, I'm always really hesitant to do car stuff very often because I know that it doesn't hit with most people. But what if I did it all the time? What if every other video was a car video? Then the audience will reform.
Yeah,
and it'll take a while.
It's funny. I'm having a conversation.
Reform around the car.
I'm
stuff.
Having a conversation behind the scenes about that exact thing. There's a conversation at Motortrend for the germ of a TV show idea that has to do with me, and I'm like, not really a car guy. They're like, well, send us all your car videos. And they're just like simple. Mm. They're not like crazy numbers. I'm like, I don't do a lot of car stuff because my audience doesn't expect it. I said, I love doing cars. Yeah. If you want to build a TV show around me customizing and playing with cars, I said, let's do it. But I said, I don't have a resume. I said, I'm a capable guy. If you want to use me for that, let's do it. You could certainly build a show around my capabilities, but I don't have a million car things to show you. And I don't have an audience that I'm going to bring with me.
But it's like there's an interesting thing and it's an unknown about moving into something like that? Like, do you want to pursue that growth opportunity, that like finding that audience and hooking them and being somebody that they're interested in watching for those things? Or do you want to continue on doing the things that you've done, trying to serve the audience that you've already built, which is absolutely a good thing? You know, I mean, I don't mean that those are one's better than the other. Those are just two options that are a little bit contrary to each other. But my experience has always been just, I'm doing so many different types of things from video to video that I don't really have one audience. I've got a whole bunch of audiences that kind of overlap a little bit sometimes, but not all the time. So that's where I'm at with those things. Just trying to continually figure that out and balance the, you know, the fun things that I want to do, the fun things that are useful, the fun things that I don't want to do. You know, I mean, there's all that stuff in there, but
yeah,
the fun things that you don't want to do.
Think of it in terms of every time you get a little thing, think of it in terms of like that one kid that's going to see, kind of like I just talked about how Evan's workshop is the kid was just in awe of meeting me, which is so nice. I mean, it's and then, you know, there's a sense of pride of like, wow, I inspired this young man and many others to pursue a career. I even said it in my comment to him. I said, I kind of put it into a metaphor. I said, you're on the yellow brick road right away. I said, you should really be proud of what you found right away. He's only 13, 15. Mm-hmm. I said, you're at the beginning of your journey and you're already on the yellow brick road. I said, you should be really proud of yourself. I was like, you know what you want now. Some people find that when they're in their 40s, 50s, 30s. I said, you're there now.
That's me. Yeah. Yeah.
And you should really be proud of that. And maybe you could be an inspiration to others is kind of what I said to him. I mean, he obviously is. But that alone, like I said, it doesn't pay the mortgage, but it gives you a nice, warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah.
And to be the corporate monster, that looks good, too. That looks good, too, for when you're going to. You know, but I do it for the feeling first.
Yeah.
And if somebody wants to look at you and go, oh, let's do a documentary, I'm like, all right, show me the money.
So, David, you brought up an idea for a topic at the beginning. What you got?
I don't know how long of a topic or how good of a topic it is, but it could be interesting because this has changed for me. If you had to make a business card, what title would you put for yourself? Mm-hmm.
Now, did this come from being at VidSummit and having to explain to people what you do?
No. Oh. I thought about it on the way there because spending time in an airport and on a plane, you get a lot of time to think. Sure. So, yeah. I will likely never print another business card. I remember when I first started the YouTube thing, I had business cards and handed them out. And now you just say, hey, look up my channel, look up my...
This is my business card, by the way, I'll show you guys. You see that? I don't want to give away my phone number, but that's a coin.
Like everybody in the world doesn't have your phone number already.
They do. This is for that person that I don't like talking to. But this is it's a luggage tag, a photograph of a luggage tag in the palm of my hand. And I say, you have your phone? And they go, just take a picture of that. And take a picture of that. And that's my business card when I walk around these events. I said, just take a picture. Oh, that's cool. So I always have that. That happened one year. I think I was with you guys when I ran out of business cards at Maker Faire in San Francisco. And I wrote my name and phone number on the palm of my hand. And I just said, take a picture of the palm of my hand. And that the end of that day, I had let about 10 people photograph my palm. And when I was in the city and I was product development, interior design, toy business, teaching, it would be interesting because if I was out meeting girls or meeting people or whoever, just socializing, I would always tell people what I felt like talking about. I would say, like if I met like a young artist, what do you do? Oh, I teach at the School of Visual Arts. Oh, what do you teach? I teach these things and that thing. Oh, that's how long you've been teaching there? This many years, that's where I graduated from. And I keep the conversation just about that. And then if I met somebody that was a product development or a designer or an architect, I'd steer the conversation to that. It was always nice to be able to pick and choose. And that's why my business card always just said my name, my phone number, and my email. That was it. And occasionally I'd have a website on there, but my website was always changing. And I sometimes didn't want to give out my website because it was always such a complex thing for me to navigate. He's like, let's just talk. I said, I'll email you some pictures. This is all pre-social media. But now, same thing. I just give out my business card or this. That just says my name and my pertinent information. But if I had to say something, I think I told you guys early, my tax return says inventor artist for 25, 30 years. This is when I first got my accountant, who's been my accountant all this time. He's like, what do you want to put there? I said, I don't know. We could put artist or inventor. He said, let's just put both. I said, okay. And so when the tax return, it says artist, inventor.
That just sounds so cool to me, because my tax returns say woodworking mm-hmm. crafts, and I started my business when I was doing craft shows.
Oh, yeah.
And so woodworking crafts does not sound nearly as cool as inventor slash artist.
And then right next to it, it says poor person, right after that. Inventor, artist, poor person.
That's inferred 10/10. From the number that's across on the other side of the form.
Yeah. Artist, inventor, pauper.
I don't know what mine says on from a tax return perspective. I mean, man, if I was making a card, I think I would just say, like, maker of stuff. I have never been able to... You know, we've talked about this before. I don't think of myself as an artist. I wish I was an artist. I wish I was a designer. I was actually thinking about that this week. Maybe we can come back to that. But I think I'm like a problem solver. That's where I feel like my strength is. And that doesn't always come out as an artistic output or a pretty output, but I think I can, like, MacGyver my way out of most things. But I don't think... Maybe I could put MacGyver.
That's a good title. I like that. Problem MacGyverer. Solver. MacGyverer.
Yeah, I think problem solver is probably what I would put there. Which kind of sounds like The Equalizer or one of those, like, 80s mm-hmm. movies where they just go around mm-hmm. and kill people that caused problems. I'm not that guy, but, you know.
So, if you want to be a designer, I'm challenging you to design a VHS cover for the movie The Problem Solver.
Oh, okay.
Because that sounds fun.
So, I was thinking about that. I don't want to derail this conversation, but I was thinking about design. So, I was looking for a hat the other day, and I was just trying to find a cool-looking hat with no name on it, no words. I don't want it to be like a team or anything. I'm just looking for a cool hat. And it's weird to try to search for cool-looking hat or well-designed hat or something like that. And I was looking...
This is my lifelong struggle, by the way.
I was looking through all these hats going like, man, I wish I could just design a hat. I wish I could just design a logo that didn't have a... You know, just a design. It didn't represent anything. And Forby, who I've known for, I don't even know, 20 years, 15 years, something like that. No, it'd be more than 20 years. Anyway, I could say, like, you know what? I'd like a logo that's a coffee cup with legs, but it also has to be wearing sunglasses and be kind of art deco. And he'd be like, okay. And then he'd come back in 15 minutes and have something. And he'd be like, I don't know, it's not very good. And I'd be like, that's perfect. That's exactly what I want. He's just really good at it. And he went to school for it. And he has a knack. And he has talent. And he has practice and all this stuff for that thing. I can just barely, you know, turn an idea into something that's presentable. I can get the idea across. I can use Illustrator and design the thing that I need, but it doesn't have that, like, you know what I mean? Like, when a really good designer touches something, mm-hmm. you can tell. It's like good. And I just don't have that, and I don't know how to get that. I don't know how to practice that or learn that other than going to school, and I'm not doing that again. So but yeah, that would be something I would like to be able to add to my skill set. And I'm not sure how you add that.
I think it's just by doing over and over again. I mean, I doubt that Forby got his skills from school. I would imagine it comes from doing it over and over and over again.
Yeah,
just repetition. That's really where it all comes from. Like, I, not to beat a dead concept, but I keep playing with these leather bags, and I made several off camera, and there are problems that I'm not solving and findings and solutions that I'm not coming to. Like, you make a zipper bag and then, like, what do you do at the end of the zipper? I have to go and look at more zipper bags that are completed and see how they've solved that problem. But I said to myself last night, as long as I just keep making them, these problems will come to me. I don't have to make each one and make it the most perfect bag I've ever made. Just keep making them and these little solutions will begin to start to figure themselves out. I had a little breakthrough last night with how to sew the sides, and when you turn it inside out, I kept sewing it all the way up to the zipper. I realized I need to leave a little bit of space so that the zipper flips inside out and then lays flat across the opening. So little stupid things like that. I'm like, okay, that I'm going to remember now. I didn't realize I was just kind of got lucky the first couple, and the last few, I'm like, I'm going to make this really nice sew. And I went way too far. I sewed more than a half inch further in than I should have. But now I know. The first couple times I didn't do it because I was being what I thought was being lazy. I was like, now I'm going to be more efficient. But being lazy was the right way to do it, but I didn't know it because I didn't know what to compare it to. So this repetition, I think, is really, really, really important.
Yeah, I guess so. And there's no, there are no stakes to design. I mean, well, that's not correct. If you're just designing for practice, there are no stakes.
Yeah.
Sitting in Illustrator and drawing something and it not being good doesn't cost anything than Illustrator. Yeah. So, yeah.
You know who has maybe give you a good lesson on that is Aaron Draplin, the graphic designer that I love.
Oh, yeah.
He's really good at pulling in a thing and going, let's try this, let's try that. And it's what
and he's got some great videos about how to design.
It's what we all do, but he really breaks it down. And every time I'm starting to copy and paste anything, I think of him and some of the things I watch them on YouTube talking about.
Yeah, I think doesn't he have like a course or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, he does a couple things.
He might. He did a class here in Toledo last October when I was in LA for something. And there was like 20 people in the class. Oh. It was a huge bummer because he's quite the inspiration for me. So
yeah, so there's a whole I had forgotten about his design work, but he has, looking it up, he has on Skillshare. He has a whole set.
Yeah,
of
he does really well on
classes.
Skillshare.
Yeah.
I think Skillshare is there because of him.
That would be an interesting thing for me to go through. I may do that. I'll have to look and see how much. I don't want to overcommit because I do that often where I'm like, yeah, I'm going to buy this online course. And then I'm going to regret that I paid for something that I'm not using forever. Oh, yeah, look at that.
Yeah, I got one of his books. So, yeah. Of course, I have everybody's book. I have a bad hobby or a bad habit of collecting books.
There could be worse hobbies, you know what I mean?
I suppose, yeah.
Well, okay, so back to the business card thing. I think I would say problem solver. Jimmy already has his, so he has kind of like cheap answer. What would yours be if you were?
I would say
David. What?
Would oh no, I my think mine would like, be Jimmy. MacGyver DiResta. That's what I would do.
I just said that. You can't steal that.
Oh, that's how I thought of it. Because you said it, then I thought of it.
Okay.
No, that's it. Mine would be Jimmy MacGruber.
Yeah, you get MacGruber. I get MacGyver.
3 seconds, and then the bomb goes off.
All right, David, what would yours be?
I think we had a conversation a year or two ago about I want to identify as an artist, but I have a problem identifying as an artist. And I think if I was going to make a business card now, it would say artist. It might say wood artist or just artist. I'm not sure, but I do feel like I have progressed closer to what I want to identify as because over the last year or two, I've tried to do some, I guess, unusual things with wood. I try to add something extra in there. And as I do more of that, I get a little bit more comfortable with that, and I feel like I feel more like an artist, since our last time we had this conversation.
Interesting. Yeah. I think if I were to go down that route and try to, for me personally, not for you, I would put artist and put quotes around it on my business card. So it'd just be like artist. You know, I think that's the only way I could get away with that, but. Yeah. Which would actually be pretty funny, you know, when somebody looks at the card. They'd be, do you believe yourself or not? No, I don't think I do. But
maker cool. of things,
yeah,
yeah.
Jimmy DiResta, maker of things.
I've seen you listed as that before somewhere, I think.
I hate when people write master this or master that. There's only one thing I'm master at. Mm-hmm. I can't say it on
Peloton. The Peloton, right?
Yeah, yeah, the master of the Peloton. Yeah. No, I hate it when like somebody writes an article on you and they go, master craftsman. I'm like, I'm not a master craftsman. Ask a real master craftsman. They would look at me and laugh.
Yeah, that's somebody outside of the actual industry or whatever, just being like, hey, that's a word I know. That means they're really good at it. And you talk to somebody in the industry and they're like, no.
I remember,
that's not what a master craftsman
is. I remember having this conversation with Nick 10 years ago, and they would always write master craftsman Nick on, or boat builder. Nick's like, I built one boat and I'm not a master craftsman, so please don't write that. And now I'm getting the same thing. Because now I'm famous too.
Yeah, I'll have conversations with people locally and like, oh, you're a woodworker. I'm like, yeah. And then we'll get into a conversation about other area woodworkers. And there's this guy named Chad Stanton. And I'm like, oh, yeah, he's a real woodworker, though. He does it for a living. He knows how to really make things. I kind of hack things together.
That's the air quote thing. I'm a woodworker. Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Cool. Any other thoughts on this before we wrap it up?
No, that's it.
I think it's an interesting exercise, for sure, to just try to figure out, whether it's for a business card or not, how you would describe yourself to somebody when you meet them.
Do you guys want to design a business card for the patrons? Give us all assignment. You're like, no homework.
Well, okay, we have been talking for about 15 years about doing some sort of a letterpress thing. What about if we did a one-sided single card with three business cards on top of it? Like, the stacked.
Right.
And one of our each fake business cards that we've designed.
Let's do it.
And Jimmy gets to print them, and Jimmy gets to mail them, and Jimmy gets to do all the work.
Black line art. Let's do it. Black line art.
Mm.
Black line art?
That's it.
Black line art.
Okay, we have 3 weeks.
I'm just thinking about the scene in American Psycho.
We got to do it in 3 weeks. I just put a date on it, so we have
that'll never happen. Be done 3 weeks in 10 years from now.
We'll do it for the 400th episode get together.
What episode are we up to now?
This is 414.
Oh,
so.
Goodness gracious!
3 weeks.
Okay.
Business card. Black line art.
What is that date? So I can write it on my calendar and throw it away.
That's January 1st, 2028.
Okay.
That is 3 weeks from now. Man, somebody who doesn't have context for us would be completely confused by the way we throw on dates and times on the show.
we joke because nobody remembers when
it's November 1st.
Okay.
November 1st. That's a date.
Do we reveal our initial designs on November 1st on camera on the video? That'd be a good idea.
Sure, yeah.
All right, then we'll do that. Okay.
Yeah. How many of us are gonna do it on October 31st? Our anniversary.
Oh,
because right,
that's a good point. Wow, we're there again already? Goodness gracious.
We started the show on Halloween in
1983. Yeah.
Yeah.
2013?
Cool. Okay.
2013?
I have no idea. Yeah, 2013.
2014?
Right. It's got to be 20. It couldn't have been 10 years.
Somewhere.
There's no way.
2014, I think.
Yeah.
We have this conversation about once every 3 months and
I know.
The fans will always answer our questions.
Somebody should just write it down, and then we would know.
I know. Somebody's yelling at us. You guys should know now.
Cool. All right. Well, business card. 3 weeks.
Hold on.
For our 50th anniversary, we're doing business cards. All right. Big thanks to our Patreon supporters, because they make the show happen, regardless of whether we know how long we've been doing it or not.
Okay. I got the answer.
Okay.
20. And this is how I always find out. Remember I drew these names when I was at Hooters?
I do.
I drew the names that we should call the thing. And this is the beginning of October. This was October 7th, 2014. I was at a Hooters in Nashville. And I wrote down a bunch of names that could potentially be the name of our podcast we were going to do. And we did it on October 31st, about 3 weeks after this photograph.
That's true.
Of name ideas at Hooters. And I want to know what happened to the pen in the picture. It's in a drawer somewhere.
Where's that pen?
All right. That's it.
Cool. Well, now we know.
2014. So we're 9 years.
Coming up on 9 years. 9 years. Goodness gracious. Cool. Well, again, thanks to our Patreon supporters, because they are awesome. Especially our top supporters, but everybody over there helps. Everybody gets the after show where they will hear us talk about the feat. They don't get to see the video that, but you know, they get the after show. It's more podcast after this show. Mm. So big thanks to the top supporters over there. Crabtree Creative, Web Ranch Specialties. Oh, name's changed. Web Ranch Specialties. Interesting. I have to reach out and find out what changed there. Warren Works, the new Janky Workshop. Scott Orm, Sean Beckner, who you mentioned earlier. Sure. Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Low End Designs. Chad's Custom Creations, Chad from Mancrafting, Works by Solo, Albers Woodworks, Corey Ward, and then other people like Randy Watson. There's a bunch of people that help us out, like a lot of them, and we're really grateful for that support. If you want to get the after show, if you want to help out the show, you can go to patreon.com/makingit. Join at any level. You'll get the after show. We would greatly appreciate it. Mm. It really does help.
Yep.
So, do you guys have anything to recommend this week?
I'm going to just say go check out Evan from Evan's Woodshop. Make sure I'll send you this so I get you the right. But Evan is a young kid. Okay. He's 15. He's been doing woodwork for a couple of years now, and he's doing Sam Maloof style work at this point. It's unbelievable. Oh. He's doing joinery. He's working with a couple. He's working with a Canadian. I'm going to say his name wrong. The Canadian woodworker. He did a fundraising project where he made a guitar chip chair with Sam Maloof style legs. Really unbelievable for a kid his age that's getting into such beautiful stuff and being able to appreciate an inspiration like Sam Maloof at 15 years old. He's really on a good path. And Crabtree Creative is always in our top. He did an absolutely unbelievable sign at Maker Camp every year. We do, it's called the Maker Swap. Keith Drennan thought of it. The Maker Swap, everybody brings something they want to just give away to another maker. And if you come with something that you've made, it goes into the swap, and then you get a ticket. Later in the day, they draw the ticket, and you get somebody else's thing. It's just a complete like white elephant, and it's really fun. And I got a beautiful piece of pottery this year. I put in one of my fake Black Raven axes that I made in the video. And Crabtree Creative made an unbelievable replica of the sign that Wesley Treat designed, the big All Makers Welcome sign. And he made his sign. It's about 3 feet tall with proper lights and stuff. And he mimicked the neon and he mimicked the light, the rolling lights. So he did an unbelievable job. So check out his Instagram for some images of that. And I don't know who won the sign. I'm curious who won it, but can check that out. So check out those guys. And then just another big shout out to Sean Beckner. It was the first time we got a chance to hug in person. And really, really, really appreciate you, buddy.
That's it. Cool. Awesome.
Oh, hey, one Dave, more. One more thing. So many people came up to me and said they love the podcast. So many people, blacksmiths, people that you guys wouldn't expect would be listening to us. So many people support us. I met a lot of patrons this weekend and a lot of people that listen. So I want to thank everybody that came up to me and said they love the show and they miss you guys. So there you go. Mm. That's it.
To piggyback on that, since we started putting up video, we've been putting up those video clips on Instagram. If you're not following us on Instagram, we're putting up clips from the show. Go follow at Making It Podcast. But because we've been putting those up, we started getting a lot of comments and responses from people who were following the account that we've never really done a whole lot with. And it was a bunch of that same kind of stuff. Just incredibly nice. Mm-hmm. And people just saying how much they enjoyed it and they feel like they're sitting around talking with friends while they're listening to us. And it's awesome. It feels so good to know that we're just helping somebody enjoy their time in the shop or on their commute or whatever. It's really great. So thank you for all those. I definitely read all of those and pass along the best of them to the other two dudes here. So, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
What you got, David?
So I'm against listening to podcasts.
Okay.
The funny thing is I don't actually listen to podcasts. It's kind of rare. It's only on trips. I do watch video podcasts, which Kelly's like, that doesn't make any sense. But since I was getting on a trip, I needed something to listen to, and I had just finished my audiobook, and I had learned that all the late night hosts started a podcast during the writer's strike called Strike Force 5. It is so funny. Like, I was laughing out loud many times on the airplane at the airport, and I wish this was a real podcast. I think it's over with now that the writer's strike is over with, but it was it was just absolutely hilarious. So Strike Force 5 podcast. I think there's only eight.
Yeah, so
episodes.
The idea there was that all the all the hosts of those late night shows did a podcast, and then the money from it went to their staff who wasn't working.
Their right? staff.
So it was all, you know, a way for them to help out the people that they work with. I thought it was really cool. I listened to a couple episodes and they were very funny. So mine this week is Wobie Design. We've talked Ben Wobie. You know, we've met him at different events and stuff. So a couple weeks ago, I made a curing stand for powder coating, and I used these curing lamps, or I guess that's what you call them. And so he took those same lamps and repurposed them to make a new version of this thing he calls the Degripper 5000, which is how he takes off grip tape from skateboards, because he makes all this awesome stuff out of skateboards. And he had this little heating element thing before that he would roll the boards through and it would heat a section at a time. And I remember watching him pull this grip tape off and just, and I remember watching him in the past just being amazed at how much work it was to take this grip tape off. And so anyway, he used these new heaters, that these infrared heaters that I found on Amazon, and he was asking me questions about the wire gauge and stuff. But so he made a new version of this thing where he can put the whole skateboard in, it heats the entire board rather than rolling the board through, and it was so hot that it was melting the grip tape to where it was like I don't know, saran wrap or something. It was really easy to come off, and he was pulling it off without any effort at all. And so it was just cool to see one thing that I did for one purpose, somebody else took and used for a different purpose, but it made what they do easier. Like, that's pretty awesome. So he also just makes really cool furniture and things out of skateboard decks, and it's fun to watch. So he's a fun guy, too.
Wait, did he burn his shop down because of you?
He didn't actually burn his shop down. No.
Okay. I haven't watched the video yet, but the one of his videos came up in my feed saying I almost burnt my shop down.
Yeah, or that was maybe something. a little bit dramatic. But he did melt the wires. So he tried to hook this thing up for the first time, and he used a thinner gauge wire. And this was something I looked into before I hooked it up, because it's pulling a lot of power through these wires. And so he just plugged something up, and it melted the wires, shorted the thing out. And if it could have caused a fire if he had left it, you know, for sure. But he was standing right there. So he was asking me over Instagram just, you know, like what gauge wire he should be replacing it with. And so I shared what I did, and that worked out well for him. So no fire, luckily. Well, yeah. Yay. You guys got anything else for this week?
That's it.
That's it.
Catching up with everybody
cool.
on my
Thank
phone.
You.
I apologize. I'm just doing some business. Good.
Business.
I'm good.
Cool.
I'm good.
Well, thanks for listening and watching, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Sorry. Look.
What a way to end the show.